Hey, happy Monday, everybody. It's Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. And the best kind of deadline is a surprise deadline. I didn't realize today was going to be the de facto deadline to get signed before this pending Major League Baseball work stoppage at midnight on December 2nd, so Wednesday. But yeah, if you want to get your medical in, you want to get pen to paper, today appears to be the day because everybody's getting locked up, Steven.
It's been interesting because, you know, I think when we entered this offseason and knew that the lockout, you know, was almost a dead certainty at midnight on Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
December 1. I think we kind of wondered, okay, what's going to happen? Like, how can you do business if you don't entirely know what the system's going to look like afterwards? But you know what it's turned into kind of free agent frenzy instead. You know, obviously a lot of people believing that the system's not going to change a whole lot, which maybe that's kind of comforting, to be honest.
Yeah. Confusing, but comforting.
And it has been, you know, I'm kind of waiting for, we got 2 hours of the show today to see what happens in the next 2 hours, because it does feel like everything that's going to happen is going to happen this afternoon, overnight, tonight, maybe tomorrow morning, because you do have to squeeze guys in for medicals, but it's been fun. It's been loads of fun.
It has. It's been, so you know what? You may think that we're going to start with Kevin Gausman, and we will, because yes, that's the big Blue Jay signing. The third Blue Jay to receive a $100 million deal as he signs the five-year $110 million deal. But, you know, since we started prepping for this show, Marcus Semien, I guess that was earlier, before today, he's already off the board, seven-year deal worth $175 million to the Texas Rangers. Rangers weren't done there. They just signed Corey Seager to a 10-year, $325 million deal.
Yes. Yes, they did.
So that's the biggest one yet.
That's a huge deal. And it's there's interesting, quite a middle infield they have now.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating, the story had been that Texas was going to go out and be super aggressive. Well, I guess that's true. The flip side of that, though, Ben, is, of course, who has not spent here, right? So, Seattle went out and did the Robbie Ray deal today, which is sort of this, you know, pretty close to what the Gausman deal is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that tells you that the Jays would have preferred Gausman to Ray. You know, maybe they would have a year ago, too. You know, they took a run at him. He's a guy that they've been interested in a long time. But who's not dealing here so far? The New York Yankees.
Yep.
You know, because you would have thought they would have been in on Seager, for sure. Boston Red Sox haven't done a hell of a lot. The Dodgers, you know, just they've lost Max Scherzer, they lost Seager, they lost two pretty important guys,
I'd say.
And, you know, they have all the money in the world, you'd think. They have not, you know, aggressively been part of this so far. They haven't even re-upped with Clayton Kershaw yet.
No, they haven't.
So it's interesting who's on the sidelines and who's driving this. Like, Texas, obviously a new player in this. I think we're going to still see more out of Detroit probably before this. I still think that's kind of where Carlos Correa is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you've got some new players in here, but the Jays, you know, holding their own in terms of the marketplace. This is the third consecutive offseason in which they have been players.
Yep.
You know, serious players.
Yeah, kind of set the market for that ilk of pitcher, because it was, a couple hours ago or an hour or so ago that we found out that Robbie Ray signed for $5 million more. Now he's got an opt out after year three with the Seattle Mariners. So $115 million over 5 years for Robbie Ray. Or sorry, it's 120. Anyways, it's somewhere between 110 and 120 for Robbie Ray with the Seattle Mariners. And as you mentioned, it feels like the Blue Jays chose Gausman over Ray. They're basically the same age. There's the less than a year separates the two. Gausman's slightly older. They have, I mean, there's a lot about them that's remarkably similar. Both guys have 5 years in Major League Baseball in which their ERA plus, so an ERA plus of 100 is average.
Yep.
Five times both guys have had seasons where they've had an above average ERA. So they've been good pitchers in 5 years in Major League Baseball. Both have one dominant pitch.
Yes.
For Ray, it's the slider, but it's also the fastball, right?
Yep.
It's the fastball, really, that he gets it by you because you think the slider's coming. And for Gausman, it's the splitter. And he has experience in the American League East. Now, it wasn't what he did in San Francisco where he became one of the best pitchers in the National League. I think he finished sixth in National League Cy Young Award voting a season ago. But this is to add to a rotation that already has Jose Berríos, Alek Manoah, Hyunjin Ryu, and now you throw a guy who had an ERA under 3 into that rotation as your fourth guy. That's a pretty good starting point.
Yeah, Steven. And he doesn't walk people, doesn't give up a ton of home runs. you're right. He's got a plus fastball, but it's really the splitter off the fastball. He's a two-pitch pitcher like Robbie Wright. So that's in that they're similar. So, you know, and again, a guy the Jays were very interested in last year, and Gausman took the one-year deal, right? And took that over, I think, what they offered him, what, three, I think, was what we think the Jays offer was to Gausman last year.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he has pitched in the American League East. He pitched for a bad team, mm-hmm. or mostly a bad team. But has pitched in the American League East, will be a different kind of pitcher than Robbie Ray. But you're right. If you look at that four-man rotation with, you know, and then we're talking about Ross Stripling or maybe Nate Pearson, you know, as your four. There's, you know, some other guys will get a chance at that, I would think. Or as your five, I mean. That's, you know, November looking ahead to, I hope, opening day, late March, early April. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Historically, that's good for the franchise.
Well, and yes, to play slightly a bit of devil's advocate is that you are losing the American League Cy Young Award.
You are.
Winner, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, Robbie Ray was great from day one for the mm-hmm. Toronto Blue Jays a season ago. But, yeah, Alek Manoah only arrived in the middle of the season. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. The other thing, though, that needs to be considered, and we talked a little bit about it when we were rehashing the Steven Matz discussion, there's no draft pick compensation involved here when you sign Kevin Gausman. He's already been qualified.
That's right.
Can't be qualified twice. So Blue Jays get a draft pick from the Seattle Mariners. They do not have to give one up to sign Gausman. Not that that's the be-all and end-all.
No, but it's not nothing. They get two back. So they got, one for Semien, one for Ray.
Right.
So they're going to get two draft picks in that after the first round, right? The compensation round. I forget do they do draft still in kind of reverse order in terms of standings in that round? I forgot.
Yeah.
Anyway, two picks number one, because, you know, it's always good to have picks. It's good to, you know, they're going to be replenishing their own farm system. They might especially be replenishing their own farm system because I still think there's something to come here. And I think the something's a trade.
Okay.
So, they're still out there and they're in the market. They're still in the free agent market. We can, positions they're going to be looking for. You're looking for an infielder, right? You're probably looking for a third baseman ideally, but maybe a second baseman. There's some guys out there, but there's some really interesting guys out there in terms of the trade market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is probably the time you cash a few prospects and, you know, I think they're trying to win next year.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that we've been given a pretty good indication that this team is interested in winning. And I don't know if this plays into the tweet that came out yesterday and the report that came out of New York that Kevin Gausman was actually offered more money to go to the Mets. And since then, the Mets have thrown all the money in the world at Max Scherzer. So they finally got somebody.
They had a number where somebody said, geez, I don't want to play for those jerks, but that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would really be doing myself a disservice not to at least, you know, try it for a couple of years. And he didn't, even Max Scherzer was like, $42 million is nice and I'll sign up for three, but give me the opt out after two because I might want to leave.
Just in case I really hate it.
Yeah. We'll talk to John Morosi about exactly what that means or what people around baseball think that means. And it's possible that it's just a Mets thing that, hey, I don't want any part of that. And if the numbers are similar, I'd rather go somewhere else. It might be that Kevin Gausman was impressed by the Blue Jays' pursuit of him when they correctly thought that that was repeatable. What we saw in a shortened season, mm-hmm. he was going to be able to do again. Except he did it better in a whole 162-game season for the San Francisco Giants. Or could look at what's happening here in Toronto and the 91 wins that just took place, the young core that is in place, the Pete Walker thing, all of that, and said, you know what? That's a place I'd rather be in. If it's the difference between, you know, another boat, like maybe I'll choose Toronto.
It's an interesting, yes, another boat or looking after the great-great-great-grandchildren or whatever it's going to be. But, yeah, look, I think the one thing, Ben, when you look at this, and again, this I'm not going to overly sugarcoat it, I hope, but the Ryu deal probably cost him an extra year, right? Mm-hmm. The Springer deal cost him an extra $25 million, it would appear, right, to get him the Toronto premium.
Mm-hmm.
The Barrios extension and the Gausman deal that we just heard about, I don't see that in those two deals.
No.
I don't see the Toronto premium in those deals. I'll play for you, but you're going to have to pay me extra. Like, it would appear, if Gausman took a little, you know, again, we don't know. Maybe that's true about the Mets or not. But again, if you just look at the deal, that looks like a market deal because it's essentially the same as Ray's deal. And he's sort of Ray. So there's not that sense that, well, yeah, I'll go there. But you're going to have to throw in – you know, this, the way that Russell Martin, all that stuff, right? So, you know, look, I choose to take the guys running, if just take them at their word occasionally and say, what have they tried to achieve here? Because this is what they have said consistently since the day they got here, that we want to build something that is sustainable, that the money will be there when the time comes, and that we want to create an organization and an environment where guys want to play, so that when we go out into the market, people are going to want to come to us, A, because we're a contender, and B, because, you know, we treat people right, and we have a really good spring training complex, and, you know, all that stuff. And folks, you can roll your eyes about it all you want, but the evidence would suggest that that's part of why you get people.
Yep.
You know, so they like the Brios thing, Brios committing essentially the prime years of his career to Toronto and foregoing the market, and then Gossman saying, you know, signing a deal for, you know, market value, but maybe turning down more that he could have got going somewhere else. You know, it's some of that's got to be about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to be, because the worst thing you can say is it's a market rate deal for Kevin Gossman. It's not what Marcus Semien got 7 years in Texas, and it's not what Max Scherzer maybe got, although Max Scherzer is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and yeah, he's yet to sign a contract that he's yet to live up to. So Blue Jays doing some good business in this de facto deadline time. Let's talk to Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, who's online right now. How's it going, Shai?
I'm all right. Nice quiet couple days.
Yeah, seriously. No, that's coming though, right? So let's just enjoy these days while we have them. But yeah, this is wild stuff. What did you make of the Gossman signing?
You know, the Jays kind of got their guy, right? They put in a lot of work to try and land him last offseason. They made some inroads. They definitely at least made him think about it. And, you know, now that he came back to market, you know, they circled back and they were able to get the elite starter that they wanted. And if you look at sort of the way this offseason has played out for the Blue Jays, right, they very clearly were trying to get an upper-tier free agent starter. They got Gossman, but could have been Ray, could have been Noah Syndergaard, it could have been someone along those lines. And they also seem to have been looking for, you know, that complementary type of starter, like be it Steven Matz, who they tried to get, you know, Andrew Heaney early on, the Anthony Desclafani, who they looked at. So, you know, they clearly seem to be, you know, clearly seem to be shopping in the two different lanes. And, you know, they've got their big guy, which is obviously the vital piece. And now it's how they complement the back end of that rotation and then, you know, figure out the infield from there.
Do you, give me the two deals that happened, the Ray deal and the Gossman deal, Shai, would you interpret that as the Jays choosing, because they're sort of the same deal with, you know, the opt-out, and there's a little bit of difference in the Ray deal, but is that the Jays choosing Gossman over Ray, or is that Ray choosing Seattle over Toronto?
I think it could be a little bit of both, right? And look, if Ray wanted to come back here, and you know the dollars are relatively similar, you know, I think the Blue Jays probably would have done that. Or it could be that, you know, Ray maybe wasn't ready to make a decision. Gossman was, and you know the Jays said, well, you know, we like him just like we like Ray. You know, let's get this done. Let's take the bird in hand, and then, you know, Seattle came in and forced the issue with Ray. So, you know, just yesterday it seemed there was some stuff floating around that Ray might not sign, you know, before the lockout. He might sit things out until afterwards. So, you know, that could have been a factor at play too. But, you know, I think from the Blue Jays' perspective, you know, there's some similarities between Gossman and Ray. Obviously, there's some differences in profile between, you know, one's a righty, one's a lefty. You know, Ray's fastball slider, Gosman's fastball splitter. Mm-hmm. But sort of the way they attack and, you know, the way that the usages and some of their durability and those kind of qualities, you know, there's some similarities there. And, you know, I think if you're the Blue Jays, if you're one's going to say yes first, you know, just take the bird in hand. Because there isn't necessarily a huge gap between them.
You used the quote in your story from Kevin Gossman when he rebuffed the Blue Jays' multi-year offer and just accepted the qualifying one in San Francisco, talking about the uncertainty of the Blue Jays and where they were going to play and that factoring into his decision. I wonder if that pursuit, do you think that impacted his eventual decision to sign the deal with the Blue Jays? Because at that number, I imagine there were a bunch of teams that were if not at it, close to it. Do you think that the previous history factored in here?
It could very well. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting when I talked to him in July at the All-Star game. And, you know, he had some good feelings about Toronto and stuff that wasn't just boilerplate, right? He came here, he debuted here as a member of the Baltimore Orioles. He pitched here multiple times over the years with Baltimore. It was part of that great rivalry between the Jays and the Orioles, you know, in the middle of the 2010s there. And so, you know, he had some fun this year. You know, I think that the Blue Jays put in a lot of effort. There were meetings right down to Sunday in the daytime, you know, trying to bring him to this decision that he ended up making. And so he was able to build comfort. And clearly comfort is something that was important to him. I thought it was interesting when he discussed how, you know, the Giants knew him and he was comfortable with their pitching setup there, and that the Giants had helped him get the best out of himself, and that, you know, he didn't necessarily want to leave that setup. You know, I think the Blue Jays have clearly shown that they have a pretty good system in place to help pitchers maximize themselves too. And that's been evidenced, you know, from Ray and Matz and certainly others beforehand. And so all those pieces together, you know, surely contributed to his wanting to come here.
Now, Shai, it would make sense to see for the Jays to go out and look for, I think you alluded to it, but maybe, you know, a depth starter or maybe a bounce back guy. You know, you've got Ross Stripling in theory, Nate Pearson competing for that five spot now. And, you know, the bullpen's actually, you know, if they're going to only be able to carry 13 pitchers, it's starting to kind of lock in terms of guys who are out of options. And, you know, that like more than half of that bullpen maybe is already locked in at this stage. But, like, I think there's another shoe to drop here, you know, in terms of, you know, a position player. And I'm not sure if it's a free agent. I think there's a trade coming here. You know, and maybe that doesn't happen until after we resume business, you know, after however long this lockout's going to be. But, you know, like, do you think they're, you know, there's a second base / third base issue that they're going to have to address. And I'm not sure, as aggressive as they've been on other fronts, I don't think they're just going to let that play out internally.
No, you know, I do believe they're going to add an infielder. I can definitely see pathways to a trade. And, you know, I'm certain they'll revisit, you know, Jose Ramirez, who they tried to acquire from Cleveland before the trade deadline. And I'm sure they tried at other points too. But, you know, that seems too logical for them. But, you know, I always felt that they were going to have to do some of their work this winter via trade, not just because they, you know, just because of the way the market was playing out, but because, you know, as much as they were losing talent in Matz, Ray, and Semien, you know, they were also losing the financial efficiency those guys provided. And so, you know, they were probably going to have to trade for someone who's on a pretty good contract, who's going to give them production beyond what the dollar figure attached is. And certainly, you know, I mean, Ramirez would definitely qualify. I'm sure the price is going to be very painful in terms of prospects if such a deal was possible. But, you know, that's one place I would look. You know, I'm not sure which direction the Twins are going, but I'd be knocking on their door seeing what their thoughts are on Jorge Polanco or something along those lines. You know, I mean, there are a ton of different ways that they can go, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're making a trade. Now, you know, are they going to do the trade for, you know, a starter and then maybe sign a free agent infielder? You know, that's entirely possible too. But it's been shown by their actions, but, you know, I think even beforehand, you know, the sense was the Blue Jays wanted to make sure they've got the pitching part taken care of because, by and large, they felt comfortable with where the offense is. And so, you know, if there's another shoe to drop before, you know, the lockout arrives, I wouldn't be shocked if it was another pitcher.
Like we keep coming back. Ben and I've talked. I keep coming back to Ketel Marte. That seems like a perfect fit to me.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly make that case. But, look, I mean, there's some history there. You know, Ross and Mike Hayes and the Diamondbacks GM, they have a history together. So certainly, but, you know, they've got the pieces and they're going to need some financial efficiency. right? They're going to have to get that. And you're not going to get that in free agency unless you happen to hit on someone whose value collapses and maybe you're signing them, you know, once the new CBA is signed. And that's entirely possible. But, you know, for the time being, if there's that opportunity for them via trade, you know, I can certainly see them going that route.
So then are you maybe not ruling out, but are you guessing that, like, guys like the Chris Bryants, the Chris Taylors of the world, like, that might be a dollar figure that they're not that interested in spending on a position player?
Well, I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but, you know, I don't think they're done adding to the bullpen either, right? So, like, if you're looking at where they're at right now, you're still probably looking to add a fifth starter, right? So, you know, or some sort of bounce back candidate in the rotation, could maybe be more than a number five. You're still looking to add an infielder. You're still probably Yimi Garcia and David Phelps on a minor league deal can't be it for the bullpen. So you still want to add some bullpen pieces, and you know, potentially you'd like to find a way to get a left-handed hitting outfielder into that mix too. So, you know, if you're going to do all those pieces together, and you know, we're going to assume that the Blue Jays don't have an endless supply of dollars, that they've got a finite amount of money to work with, you know, it becomes tougher. You can only spend so much, and you know, I could see the Blue Jays sort of spreading it around at this point, and instead of getting, you know, like sort of one more big name, one more impact player, just getting, you know, a few good players who can contribute.
Does this feel like I don't know if you have any info on this, but yeah, we talk about trades and it feels like there's at least one coming, whether that's for another starter or for a position player, that there's going to be one of significance, somebody that's going to be starting for this team, going to be in the lineup on opening day. Do you feel like what you've heard, that this deadline that seemingly exists for free agents to sign so that they have some certainty before this pending lockout, does any of that urgency exist in the trade market as well? Like are guys really, is there a lot of chatter in the trade front before we approach Wednesday?
You know, I mean, you look at it, and there's the reported Jacob Stallings deal that's out there, but you know, there really hasn't been a ton in that regard, and it's really seemed like it's the free agent market that's moving. And yeah, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you want to try to first get as much done with just money as you can, right? And if that's where the action is, and clearly the action is in the free agent market, you know, the teams are going to look to do that, and then circle back to trades once that figures out. You know, another element that's at play here is that, you know, the non-tender deadlines moved up to tomorrow, because of the lockout. So, you know, there's the expectation there's going to be a whole bunch of new free agents who are going to be thrown in the mix. And, you know, there's often value to be found in the non-tender market. So, you know, I think all those things are making the free agent market move a little faster. And then there's going to be time to figure out trades once the big freeze happens.
Do the Jays have any, do they have any kind of a 40-man crunch coming up here? Shai, Evan, I got to say, I haven't looked at it lately, but do they have any obvious, are they going to have to deal with some people before that non-tender deadline?
No, they cleared spots beforehand. So, you know, I think they're going to be at 38 or 39. I'll double check that. But I think they're going to be fine from a 40-man standpoint. And then, you know, I think some people were wondering, is, you know, Trent Thornton going to be, you know, a potentially non-tender candidate? But that's somebody that, you know, Ross Atkins really talked up during the GM meetings, as somebody who they thought could be, you know, a big piece. So the Jays are actually at 40 right now, and I believe that's before they're adding Gausman. So they might have to make a move, but I don't think they'll have areas of the 40 to cut from, and won't necessarily be feeling pressure on any of their tender guys.
Shai, great stuff. Don't put your phone away, because I feel like there's going to be some more interesting developments in the next couple of days. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Take care.
You too. Shai Davidi You mentioned the interesting thing about the potential rule change of limiting pitching staffs.
Yeah, going back to the 13 pitchers, which so if you do the math here, and again, you look at the bullpen with Romano and Meza and the two guys that Simber and Richards and the guy they just picked up,
Yimi Garcia.
That would be that's five plus a five-man rotation. Yeah. That leaves you three spots. Julian Merriweather's going to get one of those because he's out of options.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're not going to just give that arm away. You're going to give him a shot unless he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves two spots.
Maybe Nate Pearson?
Well, Nate Pearson's going to be – that'll be an interesting – like, you have to figure that, again, health-wise, you don't know, but you would assume that one of Nate Pearson and or Ross Stripling will be in the rotation as the fifth guy unless they get somebody better, and one of them will be in the bullpen, or both of them will be in the bullpen, or Nate Pearson will be in Buffalo and the opening day starter in Buffalo, and they'll stretch him out. You never have too much starting pitching, obviously. So – you know, and they just brought Phelps back on a minor league deal. There's, you know, a guy who was, again, an interesting piece, you know. Again, but, like, more of this is kind of, this is way more together than it was a year ago, right? Like, this is more of this is kind of set in stone because of contract situations, the guys they've acquired and options.
Yep.
Like, the bullpen is way more together. You know, we're kind of used to these guys patching together a bullpen from bits and pieces, and they've done a pretty good job of it, to be honest. You know, they've had some, you know, the Kirby Yates thing was an unfortunate, and Brad Hand didn't work out as a late addition, but the two guys that they traded for midseason last year were really good.
They were.
So, but I don't think they're going to have to go around the waiver wire to find guys for their bullpen in March, if it's March. Yeah, it's got a different feel. Like, again, more of this, this thing is kind of, like, even if they go out and get a depth starter or a rebound guy, he's going to have to look good in spring training to make the team.
Well, that's it. Like, if opening day was tomorrow, it's not perfect, but you could go to war with this pitching staff as is.
Yeah.
You still need a second baseman and a third baseman, though.
You do. Yeah. You need at least one of the two. You know, it just depends. I don't know how they feel about Kevin Biggio right now. He's not a third baseman for sure, though. I think he's just not defensively.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think it depends what you get, how you manage your infield assets. And again, I think that's a trade. And that's in your, you know, because you asked Shai about it, but the trade market hasn't really happened.
No.
Right? It's interesting. This has all been about the free market and free agency. You know, and there's some, you've got the non-tender deadline, you've got the Rule 5 draft coming up, you've got some kind of roster stuff coming up. But, you know, it kind of feels like that if there are going to be big trades, they're going to happen in the new world, whenever that new world emerges.
Well, and I don't know if they're allowed to do this, but I think what will happen, even if there is a shutdown, is that some GMs might do some talking.
Yes. I don't think you are prevented from talking, but of course talking is like, it could just happen, right?
It could.
Social calls, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the day after the lockout ends, things could be accelerated.
Yeah. It's kind of like that first day of NBA free agency where you're not supposed to speak until, and then like
yes.
At 12:01, everybody's already got their deal in hand. Yeah, could be that situation that business restarts on February 1st and there's a myriad of trades consummated.
How'd that
happen?
Yeah. How they do those in an hour? Yeah, but I'm going to keep beating the drum for Kettle Marte.
Yeah.
There's control. He fits the bill in every way. You're dealing with a team that's a non-contender that would take, you would think, young assets. Controllable assets, that's what they'd be looking for. Wouldn't get him for nothing.
No.
He'll be expensive.
He's not quite Jose Ramirez as far as the player.
No, but he'd be fine. He'd be just fine.
His contract is as good.
Yes.
And yeah, he can play all over the place.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I like him a lot. All right, let's continue the baseball conversation because you knew we would as December approaches with John Morosi of MLB Network next at the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt. Not that we need to apologize, but you know what? Yeah, I know. We'll get to the Leafs, okay? best team in all of the National Hockey League, or at least tied on points for it. We'll get to the Raptors. We'll get to the NFL. But, like, yeah, there's going to be a point in time here where there is no baseball to talk about other than the depressing labor stoppage. So we actually have baseball stuff to talk about. We are going to ride that horse.
We got 3 days. Let's go. Let's go.
All right, let's continue with John Morosi of MLB Network. How's it going, John?
I am outstanding, my friends. I had to check my phone a moment ago to be sure that there weren't five other people signing in the last 5 minutes. I have been a spectator on what you would call these big free agent days. Usually I'm waiting on news from Elliott and Jeff Merrick about NHL signings. And now we get to live it. We don't often do this in baseball. This is pretty special. I'm loving it.
I'm going to, and I promise at the end of this segment, John, because I know, you know, often, you know, you're like, the clock is ticking down and you want to talk about the Red Wings, but you also want to talk about the University of Michigan. We will allow you time at the end of this segment.
Thank you.
To talk about the Michigan Wolverines.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Michigan with time at the end.
We're going to give you,
I love it.
We'll back time it so you can do that thing, okay? Because, my God, if you're not going to do it now, you know, when would you do it? So, but back to the market. Yes, back to the free agent frenzy. I guess for the last week it's been self-evident that this is what was going to happen before this deadline, but I think a lot of us were surprised, or I'm still a bit surprised, that, you know, a looming lockout has created kind of a frenzy in business when, you know, no one's entirely sure what the system's going to look like afterwards. But it does seem to kind of focus the mind and focus the wallets here, doesn't it?
It really does, Steve. And I think two things are affirmed here by what we've seen the last several days. In baseball, as in most industries, as you point out, we are all motivated by deadlines in life. And baseball is also motivated still, at its core, by analytical decisions, the numbers, and understanding that this is potentially your last chance to upgrade your roster for an indefinite length of time. Now, we can be optimistic and hope that baseball avoids a work stoppage. We shall see what eventuates over the next 48 hours. But right now, we know that executives and agents and players are all saying that uncertainty is waiting for them on December 2nd. So let's make a deal right now. And there's plenty of folks who are saying maybe we should just have a free agent deadline every year, and perhaps that's worth exploring. But all we can handle and analyze is what's in front of us right now, and that is when teams have to make a decision in a very short amount of time, they'll do it if that's the circumstance, if that's their reality. And teams are operating within that reality right now, none more so than the Texas Rangers, who I have to credit my colleague Joel Sherman for this number. And I'll say it slowly because I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. In the last several days, the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, the last place Rangers, have committed more than $500 million.
Yeah.
Again, over $500 million in contracts committed by the Rangers in the last 72 hours or so. It's just a staggering figure, and from where I sit, speaks to the general health of the business, okay? If this is unhealthy for the players, this is a bit of unhealth that I would like to have, because it's rather remarkable to see just how much money is being spent right now.
Well, it's healthy for everybody's healthy, right? I mean, like, this is why it's tricky going into a work stoppage where normally, you know, it would be about unfairness and poverty, right? Like, the players would say you're being unfair and the system's penalizing us, and the owners would say, oh my God, we're all going broke, we're all going to lose our teams. This doesn't exactly play to either of those narratives, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it's why I hope, and obviously there's conversations happening probably as we speak in Texas right now between the two sides. One hopes that there is a television on in that room and they are watching all of these signings be reported, and perhaps there's a bit of wisdom saying, now, can we really find a way to keep this going here? I mean, clearly people are signing contracts. There's a lot of positive conversation around the game. I've really never experienced a time like this with so much conflicting emotion in all my years covering the game. Of course, we have not had a work stoppage for a quarter century, so this is new territory for a lot of us covering the game. I was obviously in middle school the last time we had one of these, so it's different for a lot of us. And I do think it's important to point out, and this is a matter of public record here, that MLB's proposals have addressed a lot of the union's stated concerns. The one of the proposals of the last several months had a salary floor. That gets at what the union has been concerned about with respect to lack of competitiveness. There has been a lottery proposed, which, again, would help address some of the quote-unquote tanking that's gone on in the game. The overall... the top end of the CBT threshold for luxury tax, that was moved up, according to a report from Jeff Passanier recently. So there is a lot to like in this package from the player's standpoint. The question is just, does it go far enough to get a deal? And I think that's just a matter of those discussions that are happening in real time right now in Texas.
Yeah, maybe there's still hope because it feels like you wouldn't want to stop the momentum right now. It feels like a pretty interesting time to be a baseball fan and a Blue Jays fan as well. You mentioned $561.2 million committed by the Texas Rangers. Blue Jays, the third most money doled out now at $121 million in free agency. So, like, all the big names are gone except for, like, a couple, I guess. I mean, in this great shortstop class, we've already seen – Corey Seager move. We've seen Marcus Semien sign with the same team. But Carlos Correa is still out there. Trevor Story is still out there. So the question goes from, will anybody sign before the deadline to, will they all sign before the deadline?
Well, I don't think they will all sign. I still don't believe Correa will. I would be really surprised if he did. It could happen, but I was told as recently as yesterday to not expect it. I think Baez could sign. Story could as well. In general, I would say this. If I were in Carlos Correa's shoes right now, I would like this general result so far, because what this does is, by two shortstops going to one team, just the mathematics of this, right? So it takes two players off the board to one suitor, which leaves more suitors for the available shortstops. It's, again, basic simple math here, but it does make sense intuitively that whether it's the Tigers, whether it's the Astros, whether it's the Yankees, who appear to be comfortable forgetting 2017 and moving on here with respect to Correa and how he can fit with that club, they need a shortstop. The Yankees need a shortstop. The Astros still do. The Tigers do. And any number of other clubs, the Mariners are one, who would consider moving some pieces around. Maybe Correa plays shortstop or third there with J.P. Crawford. A lot of different scenarios there, but I think it raises some interesting possibilities. In general, though, I do think the teams that make the most sense for Correa, Tigers, Astros, Yankees, in some order, especially because I think those three teams have not really made huge splashes with all respect to Eduardo Rodriguez for the Tigers. I think Correa would represent a whole nother layer of star power, and I think he's still out there. That's one of the many possibilities that still exists.
What is the Yankees are sitting in the weeds there, JP? What do you think's going on with them? And also, you know, like the other team we normally would be talking about in this situation would be the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have lost two big pieces off their team. Why are the mega clubs been so quiet so far?
No, that's an excellent question, Stephen. I think a couple things. Number one, the Yankees have always been of the mind that, and this goes back to the Brian Cashman playbook from more than 10 years ago. I remember I cite this often because I think it's useful precedent. With Mark Teixeira, the Red Sox thought they had him. And then Brian Cashman had said back then to Scott Boras, circle back with me before you do anything and just see if we can top whatever you've got. And so they negotiated with the Red Sox. They got pretty close to a deal. Calls up Brian Cashman, says, here's the numbers. Can you do better? Yeah, we can. Boom, boom. Teixeira becomes a Yankee. I think to some extent for the player that they want, and I think that is a really important clause here. Mm. I would have thought that Seager was an option for the Yankees. The Rangers just went extraordinary lengths to get Seager. I did not think the first number of his deal was going to be a three. I thought he was going to be more of a $225 to $250 million type player. I did not think he was going to be a $300 million player, and he is now. The Rangers just went so far above and beyond, which, again, this is what free agency can do. If you are a club that has cash, that needs status, that needs some stars, that needs to accelerate your rebuild, that's what free agency is for. And that's what people have been wanting to see some of the non-playoff teams do, even the Marlins in their own way. They've been aggressive, certainly, with the Avisaíl García signing. So we have seen teams jump into there. I think the Yankees are are still aggressive and will find a way to get a shortstop. Maybe it is Correa now that would be at the top of their list. I think the Dodgers, with their perspective, I really believe, Stephen, that once they got Trey Turner, that to me signaled that they were prepared to move on from Seager. Mm-hmm. I think there was maybe some wariness on the part of some of his more chronic injuries that he's dealt with over the course of his career. But in general, the Dodgers still a very good club. And I am a little bit worried, though, about them and Max Muncy's timeline with this elbow situation. It seems really murky. They don't really have a whole lot of clarity on him yet. I'm a little concerned about Muncy because he really is the guy that's really been the fulcrum of that lineup for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't expect both of those shortstops, or I mean, I guess Marcus Semien's the second baseman, was all of last year to end up in one spot. And the Rangers are trying to go from a 100 loss team into the playoffs, I guess. Good luck to them. This tweet from Andy Martino caught a lot of Blue Jays fans' eyes yesterday, John, that the Mets offered Kevin Gausman more than the 5-1-10 that he accepted in Toronto. Had you heard anything similar? That was before, of course, that they ended up landing Max Scherzer for all the money. But yeah, what are you hearing in regards to how close Kevin Gausman was to ending up somewhere outside of Toronto?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, remember, I think a key development here is that the Jays had pursued him multiple times before. I think we touched on this last time we talked, that there was at least some familiarity. And Gausman not signing with Toronto either the previous two winters could have been construed as either A, he didn't want to come to Toronto, or, as we found out, B, a very long courtship. Just a very, very long courtship. They found each other once again. And I really think you look at the success that Robbie Ray had with the Jays, I think that was a really nice data point for P. Walker and the Blue Jays to say, listen, we helped Robbie Ray win a Cy Young. And Pete is an excellent pitching coach. And there was that relationship there that allowed Robbie to do things he had never done before. Gossman's coming off of two very strong seasons. If he gets any better than what he's already been, he's going to win the Cy Young too, because he's already been really good. So I think that it was, and I give this a credit to Ross Atkins and his baseball ops team, that clearly the presentation they gave to Gausman resonated with him, that he remembered it, and that they treated him well and with respect throughout the process. And I'm a believer that in baseball and in life, when you treat people the right way, things usually come back around to you in a positive frame of mind, and I think that's exactly what happened for the Jays. I think it's a really good story from that perspective. I trust and believe Andy's reporting, and I think Kevin may have just preferred to play in Toronto rather than New York. I think, and I really believe, that the relationship that was founded and built over the last couple off seasons mattered a lot in the end. And I'll be curious to hear what Kevin says at his press conference to that effect.
Well, I'll tell you, if that's true, it's, you know, and again, or if it's true that they got him for anything under the top of the market, JP, that is a first, you know, in Toronto sports history, definitely Toronto sports baseball or baseball history, because right. They've always had to pay a premium for free agents, right? They've always had to overpay the market to get people to come here so that would be, that would be a triumph for the organization if that's true. So, okay, now I'm looking at the clock here. Okay, you know, again,
is he going to have enough time?
No, yeah, well, not sure.
How much time?
Well, you've got, let's say, how long are we going to give him here?
5 minutes? Is that enough?
Can you do it 5? Yeah, okay. What happened? Anything happened on Saturday in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where you reside, JP?
Sure. So, first of all, it was a great day, a snowy day. Michigan beats Ohio State. The first time I was ever able to experience a Michigan win over Ohio State as a parent, because the last time that Michigan won, it was 2011. I was not yet a father, so that's kind of cool to be able to share that with your daughters. The 2011 win, Ohio State was on probation. There were a lot of issues there. This is the first legit win over an Ohio State team in 18 years. I had a full head of hair and was in university the last time Michigan legitimately won a game against a competitive Ohio State team. So, great day. My kids were engaged with it. I tell you what, too, I got a chance to watch over the weekend. And you know, I tweet way more often now about Michigan hockey than I do about Michigan football right now, because this team, the best ticket in town arguably is the hockey team. And I'll tell you this. You got 5 guys from Michigan's team going to the World Junior Camp for the U.S. and two, likely for Canada with Power and Johnson. Both have been amazing. I went and saw Adam Fantilli, who's from the Toronto area. I saw him play yesterday. A little bit of time. I had a little break away from baseball to watch him play with the Chicago Steel. He is outstanding. Going to be a high-round pick in 2023. So mixing a little baseball, a little hockey, a little football. But keep it an eye, man. World Juniors is going to be a lot of fun. The U.S. has a gold medal to defend, guys. But Owen Power, Michigan's going to have probably seven guys in that tournament, two for Canada and like up to four or five for the U.S. Incredible.
Wow, Vegas took a beating that only took like a minute and a half. Like,
yeah,
a minute and a half.
And you got
to. And I didn't even talk about Lucas Raymond. By the way, go back. On like September 12th, okay, there was a tweet. I was watching Raymond play. I said, forget this talk. Is he going to be on the roster? No. Yep. The question is, can he win the Calder? And he is going to do it. He is an amazing player. The Wings, it's going to be a slow march. We're not the Maple Leafs, okay? Mm-hmm. But we're making progress. Draper's doing a great job, and so is Stevie Y.
Yeah, Sweden wants a do-over on the Lucas Raymond not being attached to the whatever their 50-man roster for the Olympics. They want him in. They want him drug tested. They want him there. All right, John, well done all the way around. Love it as always.
Thank you, my friends. Always enjoy the conversation, and we'll see if Michigan can get one more win there on Saturday against Iowa.
All right, see you, John. There's John Morosi, MLB Network, with time to spare too.
Yeah, that's amazing. And he got the World Juniors. I think you just talked about the football. Did you watch any of the football game? I have no allegiance. Although the late great Shaky Hunt was a Michigan supporter. One of his kids went to Michigan, so I'm thinking about Shaky in the great press box in the sky watching that game. But like that stadium is such an amazing place, and they've. Like John said, they've had this horrible, and they beat the crap out of Ohio State. Like they really did. So, it was compelling. So even if you're a neutral, to see those 107,000 people watching in the snow, finally seeing their team win, finally seeing Harbaugh beat Ohio State. It was, it was something. I was watching Western and St. FX on my phone. Cause
like a good Canadian.
I'm wearing my purple today. Yes. That's again, it was not fair. They shouldn't. They got to figure this out. It was 50. They were up by 50 points at halftime, right? The Atlantic schools, it's an issue, but they're into the Vanier Cup, back to the Vanier Cup against U of S. In Quebec in a game where there'll be nine people in the stands now because there's no Quebec team in it, unfortunately for them.
And your Ticats are through into the East Final where they will meet
gritty
the
defensive performance.
Toronto Argonauts again in front of hopefully more than nine
people. Well, there'll be some folks from my town will make the trek down to QEW, so I think that'll help. And, two great rivalry games, because they got Sask and Winnipeg in the other game, which the Banjo Bowl rematch. So, it's that part of it has played out really well. So we'll see. But yeah, the Ticats played defensively, played really, really well. They got to get the offense going.
Yeah, the West semifinal goes to overtime. And the Iron Bowl goes to overtime.
That was a great game, too.
Yeah, it was.
Crazy game.
It's weird how, college football is the second biggest sport in the United States, the NFL, and then number two is college football, and then number three is like something way down the list. It's like maybe the NBA, but whatever. College football is massive, and college basketball is big, and the tournament is definitely big. But in this country, it I think from a ratings perspective, never truly translate. And I'm not speaking from seeing the numbers over the weekend, but it is strange how big a product that is south of the border that it doesn't quite translate. To this country, that
you
much.
Mean American college football here?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm guessing there were a lot of people being potatoes in front of their TVs over the weekend on Saturday who were clicking around and went, that looks interesting.
Yeah.
You can find an allegiance somewhere, right? You can always find somebody to cheer for. It's sort of like the tournament.
Yeah.
You can always find someone to cheer for.
No, for sure. And there's nothing like football in the snow, too, which I was watching a bit of that Michigan State game as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know what? And I like the overtime format in college football.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm got a better one.
Yeah, I don't think playing 10 minutes of normal NFL football is a solution either. But yeah, I'm down with it. And it was a great sports weekend. We haven't even really scratched the surface of it, including the Montreal Canadiens turfing their GM. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Leafs with Renaud Lavoie of TVA Sports next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.